afternoon, those of you who are not necessarily football fans.
I'm raising my hand, if you haven't noticed.
Yeah, I think we're all kind of raising our hand. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Give us a call if you've got one in you. It'd be pretty cool. And welcome to the first episode of Season 11 and the first episode of 2013, a year with no apocalyptic significance, except for the fact that Kevin Costner should be delivering my mail today.
Oh, yes.
Via Pony Express.
Via Pony Express, yeah.
I don't hate that movie as much as other people do. Let me say, just to be clear, I don't think it's great.
Okay.
But it's not the worst thing ever.
I liked the concept of the movie. I liked the way the kind of the message the movie was trying to explain about specifically survivalists and stuff like that. But I thought the execution really, really left something to be desired. I think he was really, I mean, he had the albatross of Waterworld around his neck and had to go from there.
The post-apocalyptic Kevin Costner movies haven't been the strongest in the world.
No.
But I will say that it tried.
Yeah.
And most movies don't even do that.
And honestly, if the only post-apocalyptic thing that happens this week or this year is everybody's expecting Kevin Costner to show up on a pony to deliver mail from 20 years ago, I'm okay with that.
I haven't seen him in a movie in a while.
As long as he doesn't show up with gills.
Okay. So, no, that'd even be funny. I mean, hey.
I think I'd prefer that, actually.
Yeah, that would at least have some scientific thing.
It would be one step closer to Aquaman for months.
That's true. So, we got a very interesting email at the very beginning of, like, just before the show we went on the air. And so I'm going to read it to you, and then I think we're all just going to have a moment where we all kind of feel the same way about it. This comes to us from Bruce from Johnson Creek, Oregon. I was directed here by people at the Reddit website. I posted a plea for help in my Atheist Havens bulletin boards. Or in the Atheist Havens bulletin boards. I am at my wit's end. I am in fear of my life. I can send my phone. And then he goes further on to say on the Reddit that he is being harassed by what he believes are the Christian militia or the God's army. I need someone who is prepared to take on this burden. My health is being destroyed by their harassment. And he's asking, what he's asking for in that is in that Reddit article is specifically for a safe house. So let's get this out of the way right away. I don't think this passed anybody's smell test when we read it.
No.
Yeah.
Not at
quite.
All.
Yeah. You, you were, it was 4 seconds before you were making A-team jokes, I think.
No, well, I'm not joking so much as on one level, I don't know. Let's just say for the sake of argument that his claims are true and there's some sort of Christian anti militia group or something coming after him. I'm not sure what he expects us to be able to do.
Well, it was really unclear on what he was asking for, but it's clearly asking for a safe house. And if we were to say that less dramatically, he's looking for somebody to hang out with or a place to go that isn't near where the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
Which, and if you read the Reddit article, I've actually posted a link to the Reddit post on Ask an Atheist. So if you go to our website right now, you'll see it. And at askanatheist.tv. And the first question that everybody asks is, why don't you call 911? Why don't you call the cops? This is what the cops are for. And there's a verisimilitude here, or verisimilitude, however you pronounce that, in that there are weird organizations in that state. There are, you know, and so there's a possibility, but sort of the drama of it sort of set us off a little bit in one.
I think when the claims are that big where it's like, it reminds me a little bit of these.
Well, what claims?
Well, the claims that there's this militia group after me. It seems like a big one, and if it's not followed up by details, my skepticism sense is firing on all cylinders.
I actually accuse you a little bit of getting over skeptical about this one, and that's sort of what I was getting at. Mm-hmm. Are they attacking him because he's an atheist? Probably not, but there is definitely harassment. Really, is a crime, and it can definitely occur.
I think that maybe perhaps he has some sort of dispute with a neighbor. I'm not saying that somebody isn't bothering him. Okay. What I'm saying is that he may be a bit paranoid, perhaps, and that maybe he's overplaying what exactly is happening.
That is an invention. You are writing stories.
I'm just saying that based on
speculation on
yeah,
it
on
is speculation. Okay. I'm not basing this on anything other than people in our community who I have met who have been this paranoid before.
Right.
And the way this is written with the lack of detail that's included in it, that's the perception I'm getting.
Yeah. So, but the thing is one of the reason I wanted to bring this up, which I thought was very interesting, is this is an interesting story. Maybe he needs help. Maybe he doesn't. Go to our website, check the link, and And if you want to figure out if he needs help or not, that would be the way to do it. But what it really interested me about this was that it came up with a subreddit called Atheist Havens or something like that, which I thought was a really neat idea. And what it is it's a Reddit message board of people offering places to stay for folks who are having trouble with religion or need to get away and stuff like that.
And in our sort of journeys in real life amongst atheist groups and social groups and lectures and things like that, you do meet people from time to time that say, wow, I was part of a very entrenched religious community. I had nowhere else to go. I didn't believe in God. They said, you know, that's apostasy. You're going to be, you know, banished. And what do you do there? Does someone need a way out?
And there were
people that you know, suffer from that and do need a way out.
And there were times when people who've been on this show, Rich Lyons in particular, who have needed something like that. And I'm really gratified that something like this exists for people like our emailer Bruce and for people like Rich and, you know, for people who need to get away from religion. And I think this thing that Reddit is doing really needs to get more attention, which is why I wanted to talk about this today.
And I think this is an important aspect of why the internet is an important tool in the atheist community, because there's often people who feel like they're the perhaps only atheist that they know,
yeah,
or at least the only atheist that they know of. And having a community online where you can actually know that you're not alone, know that you're not having these concerns in isolation, that there are other people going through the exact same things that you're going through, and that you can have somebody to talk to, somebody that you can get certain things off of your chest without feeling like you're immediately going to get dogpiled,
yeah,
or judged or banished, as Becky put it. And I'm glad that there's something like this out there. This is something that we desperately need as a movement.
Absolutely. And it was something we talked about with Tacoma Atheists and weren't exactly sure how to do. And, you know, there are details to this, there's legalities to this, and if you're somebody who can answer those questions, I'd really like to hear from you about the best way to make a service like this work. So, again, give us a call, 253-584-1480, or email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. I'd really like to hear about it. So, Bruce, this is the best I can do. I'm a bit far away. I'm in Tacoma, and I hope you get whatever help you need, whatever it is. So, Becky, you had you heard something on the way in from the Pew Research Forum, right,
I did. You know, the Pew Research Forum has done a survey of our incoming Congress, and it says that, as of now, our new Congress, 10 members of Congress refuse to disclose what their religion is, either none of your business, or I don't have a religion.
Yeah.
And while we don't have anyone that is an avowed atheist in Congress anymore, we had Pete Stark, who was an avowed atheist, lost his re-election bid. We do have now an increasing religious diversity in our Congress.
I do like that the thinking in politics right now is not that Pete Stark lost his position because of his atheism, but for other reasons.
I hope so. I do know that it was used against him by his opponent, that California now has a top two primary system,
right,
where he's in a very Democratic district, which meant for a long time that he would basically sail to re-election easily, but he was up against another Democrat this time, and then they did bring it up. I'm not going to say that's the reason that he lost. I think that there were a lot of other issues that were on the table.
Yeah, but certainly he's going to be attacked on it, but mm-hmm. the thinking seems to be that the religion really didn't enter into it. It was more of Pete Stark had been in the legislature for a long time.
A long time.
Yeah.
And I did find it disconcerting that it even became an issue,
well,
considering it was another Democrat using it against him.
Are you at all surprised by that?
Not at all surprised, but it's I'm certainly disappointed in it.
Okay.
Now, if I remember correctly, the extent to which he was using his atheism against him is that his opponent was saying, and I will stand up for our American values, and it was a very loose connection to the fact that Pete Stark didn't vote in favor of reaffirming In God We Trust. But his opponent didn't even mention In God We Trust in that.
But California is not Alabama, where you were talking on the way in, where the Supreme Court justice who got thrown off for the Ten Commandments has now been re-voted back on the bench?
Yes. And in other news that makes you want to become a supervillain, that it doesn't really matter if you obey the law anymore, that if you're on one side of the culture war, it seems that people are happy to reelect you, whether you respect other rights of minority groups or not.
That's, yeah. I don't know what else could be said about that. So,
well, there's a lot, but we just can't say it on the radio.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, we have another email. This is Kyle from the internet, so obviously a longtime listener. I listen to your podcast, and I have a question. Whenever I feel that a theist is trapped in a debate, the theist usually responds with, God works in mysterious ways, and humans can never understand the will of God. I understand that this is a cop-out, but what is the best response for this kind of statement?
A mic drop, I guess. You basically just won the argument. It's a cop-out. It's whenever you get somebody to retreat into God having mysterious ways, I think what you need to do is remind them of all the times that they, in conversations with you, have mentioned that they understand God's will and are happy to tell you what God intends and what God means by certain things.
There's a logic failure here that has nothing to do with the existence of God, which is they claim to know what God wants and what God's rules are, but then whenever they're challenged on them, we don't know the will of God. You can talk about a mic drop, and you can say that you've won the argument. And from a debate standpoint, and if we were debating for points, yeah, you've won the argument. Unfortunately, in the wider world around us, the debate isn't, we're not, there's no points. Yeah. We don't go five rounds and then the judges decide who wins. What it is you have to convince other people. Mm-hmm. You have to talk to other people, and you have to tell them that, you have to make it clear that your argument works regardless of what they say. And there's a lot of people out there who say God works in mysterious ways and are bought by that argument.
Yeah, I don't think necessarily that it's about convincing the other person you're debating with, but it is, like you say, Sam, about convincing somebody. Mm. I think, though, that I don't know if you ever saw the movie Thank You for Smoking.
No, I never did.
There's a great scene where Aaron Eckhart, who is a cigarette lobbyist in the movie, is talking to his son about arguments, and he's telling him what he does for a living, and he says, okay, let's just pretend for a moment that we're going to debate this. You represent chocolate, I represent vanilla, and they have sort of a fake debate. And instead of him saying how great vanilla is, all he does is just shoot down chocolate on his son over and over again.
Right.
And at the end, his son goes, but you didn't convince me. And he says, I'm not trying to convince you. I'm trying to convince all of them.
Exactly.
And I think in these sorts of debates with a Christian, that's who you're doing. Is don't get into private, extended email debates with theists that no one else sees. Make sure you have an audience, because then at least you're not wasting your time.
But there's sort of a mechanical question that he's asking here, and I'd like to throw this to you, Becky, is that when somebody says that, you've won the argument logically. You've won the argument, but now you have to convince the people who are listening to you that you've won the argument. What kind of stuff do you say?
Yeah, I mean, I would argue that this isn't necessarily for an audience. I think Kyle right here is asking about how do I convince this specific person that God works in mysterious ways is not really a valid answer, that it is a cop-out. And I think that, Mike, there's strength in what you said in terms of, you said so many times that you did understand the will of God and you did know what he was trying to say and how we should live and prescribe what we should do and what our behaviors are. I'm not really buying it. And, you can say, how can you say God works in mysterious ways for this particular thing, whereas God's ways are very, very clear for 10 other things that you've already talked to me about?
Yeah, God's views on homosexuality, on what sort of things you should eat on Friday, all clear, but I think maybe that's what you do, is every time that he does bring up clarity again, just say, but I thought God worked in mysterious ways and you can't understand him.
I wouldn't even bother. My answer to that is don't even bother, because if we were to drop into harmful group discussion, terminology here, God works in mysterious ways is a thought-stopping statement. When somebody says the Lord works in mysterious ways, this is somebody who's saying, I don't know why, I don't care to know why, and as of this moment, I am no longer intellectually engaged in this subject. And when that happens, there's no convincing them. There's no logical argument to be had anymore, because they're not arguing on logic anymore. And that's another reason why a mic drop is appropriate. Why just walking away from it is appropriate, is because you're not going to get anywhere from them. They're not somebody who's interested in the truth. They're something who's interested in things that comfort them at that point. And this is why, when I talk about stuff like this, I'm specifically speaking to other people who happen to be listening, because that person has basically gone in, you know, has gone under the shield of the cone of silence at that point, and they're not paying attention anymore.
Yeah, you're right, Sam. That is somebody basically sticking their fingers in the air saying, I'm not listening at this point. No new information is going to come in. And I think that's a pretty standard trope of a lot of faith-based thinking, which is that you are taught that questioning certain ideas or asking certain questions is somehow a bad thing, or that some sort of outside malevolent force is working through you to ask those questions. So, yeah, I think you're absolutely right, is that the debate's basically over at that point because they're not going to listen to anything you say now anyway.
Absolutely. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. When we come back in a moment, we're going to talk about vampires, I think.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
So what does everybody want to play?
Something new?
Something with guns. Lots of guns.
Something that supports playing other than combat, you knob.
Jerk face.
All right, how about Dead Stars from Dame and I Publishing? It's a sci-fi game that uses the Universal Decay rules, a variation on our usual fantasy campaign system. This system has an emphasis on social and technical skills, yet allows technical characters to make thousands of different weapons.
Hey, psionics.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna be a bug with big freaking guns.
Shape-shifting tech head for me.
Check out DameandI.net for the sci-fi horror game Dead Stars, as well as a listing of other products and to get involved in the community forums.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And Mike, actually, before we get into the fun stuff, there was a question I had about Becky's news story. So there's 10 people who won't identify their religious affiliation. Is that good or bad for the atheism visibility movement?
It depends. It depends on what their beliefs actually are. When you open the box, if the cat is alive or if it's an atheist.
Very nice.
I don't know. I think that on one level, it's a good thing for people to say none of your business if that becomes the standard thing, because none of your business also means I'm not going to write legislation based on it. But if it's just a dodge where they say that now, but once they're in office, they turn into Rick Santorum, then that's a bad thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it eventually comes out null, because it's, again, it's people who won't identify one way or the other. And we need in the atheism visibility movement, we need people who are going to identify. So joining us now is one of the original producers
the
of
the original originals.
The original originals.
Oh, wow.
How you doing, Casey?
I feel fantastic to be back. Thank you for letting me sit in.
Very cool. So
we've got
an email, and I think you know what it's about. And this comes to us from Bartholomew from the internet, and he writes, "Hey! I am a craving vampire. I have just recently realized my dark magic, and I'm wondering if I have any support in the world."
I can't speak with a certain amount of expertise, given that I have downloaded the DLC Dawnguard on Skyrim, and I have a certain amount of experience hunting and killing vampires now. I would say, Bartholomew, you were a foul abomination and a creature of the night, and the sooner somebody stakes you, the better.
Well, I totally believe this guy. I clearly believe in dark magic. Yeah.
I used to play live-action vampire LARPing when I was in high school.
Wow, you just admitted that.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm about as much of a vampire as this guy is. as much as you can be pretending to be one.
Is this somebody trolling us specifically, or... Man, it's... there's something like these where I want video going along with it of the guy writing the email to us, because I have a feeling it would tell us so much about what's going on.
Well, he'd probably have the falsy fangs in, and he would probably be drinking like a Mountain Dew out of a 7-Eleven 44-ounce cup. You know?
Probably Mountain Dew Code Red.
Yeah, Code Red was popular, yeah.
Double the XP, Mike.
Ouch. So,
yeah. Oh, man.
Should we take this seriously? I mean, the phrase that would make it very clear that if you have support in the world, it's not going to come from us is the phrase dark magic.
Yeah.
I'm about to get all Randy Challenge on somebody who thinks he's a vampire, but if you can prove it, there's money out there for you.
Yeah, I just see trench coats and bad poetry. This is just, oh, yeah. I hope it's a joke. That's what I'll say.
Okay, that's cool. Oh, man. So we have another one, and this is another email. This is a long one, and you've been wanting to tackle this one for a while. And so we're gonna take it in sections, I think. And this is Matt from the internet, and he writes, "I am an agnostic from Nepalese Hinduism background, but more I research Hinduism, the more I tend to think it's the true religion. I want you to prove me scientifically that Hinduism is wrong. About Vedas, the oldest book of Hindu, on the time of Alexander, Greek scholars gathered genealogy of Indian dynasties. At the time, they had succeeded to get the record of 154 dynasties, and those who had ruled for 6,547 years authentically, and the Vedas were more ancient than them. So the age of the Vedas is between 8,000 and 10,000 years old, making it older than most of the other religions and proving Abrahamic religion's Book of Genesis wrong scientifically."
It's old, so it's true?
That's the argument so far, is that because it's 8 to 10 years,
right,
you know 8 to 10,000 years old versus 4 to 6, therefore it's more true?
Yeah.
I know a little bit about the Vedas, and I know a little bit about the historical tradition, but when they're sort of throwing in the, hey, we know about the history of these dynasties and they're real places and all these sorts of stuff.
Right.
I mean, that's the whole Spider-Man analogy. New York is a real place, but just because New York is a real place doesn't mean that Spider-Man is a real person.
Yeah, the Vatican is a real place. The Pope is a real person. A lot of people claim that he's infallible, but that doesn't make any scientific claim as to whether or not he's truly infallible or anything like that.
Yeah, you can point to ancient kings and people that are in the historical record, but it doesn't mean that any of the claims about them mythologically are true. I know that there's a lot of claims of the supernatural in the war diaries of Julius Caesar.
Yeah. Hmm.
But I highly doubt those things, but I'm pretty sure the troop movement stuff in there is true.
So he asks us a few questions. The first one is, how can that old book explain the universe so accurately in terms of its cycle, years, and dynamics?
I'm not sure that it does.
It doesn't really, and I admit that I am not an expert on Hindu mythology and stuff like that. But if I remember right, the Kali Yuga cycle, or whatever it's called, is a bit... It has a lot like the L. Ron Hubbard Scientology thing going on, where it speaks to dates and time periods that are far longer than the age of the universe. It's the inverse of the Christian creationist problem. Right. Creationists think that the world is 6,000 years old. Scientologists and Hindus and a few other organizations think that the world, the universe is, hundreds of trillions of years old.
Right. Yeah. It's certainly whenever someone says, "Oh, well, this holy book is supported by these scientists, or supported by this scholarship," always the question is, "Well, who and where?" Because you never hear any back it up. It's just kind of the people saying, "Well, 99% of something does this."
Yeah.
You just made 99% up.
Yeah, and this guy basically just did precisely that. When you look at the email, it's basically just a bunch of links to Hindu creationist apologetic websites. I mean, that's essentially what every Christian and now Muslims are starting to do as well, which is that you have these apologetics who are using the exact same arguments, like this is supported by science, and look, this science proves this holy book right. And they use the exact same methods, the exact same arguments, but they seem completely unaware that each of them are doing this. So I would say, Matt, if you want to prove that Hinduism is true and you want to do it, you don't send us a bunch of link to a radio show. Convince not us, but
the world at large.
Yeah, get these things published in a scientific journal.
His next question is, how might have they acquired advanced mathematics and science in the dawn of civilizations? I have a quick one. They didn't. But if they did, they would have acquired it the same way we have, mm-hmm. through trial and error,
right.
through experimentation, through observation, and through hard thought.
I think this is the same argument a lot of the ancient alien people tend to make.
Exactly.
Which is that ancient people must have been really stupid. So we can't figure out how to stack rocks on our own. We can't figure out how to build these temples. We can't figure out math. Therefore, it must have been some outside source, whether it's going to be the gods or it's going to be aliens or something. You know, human beings are not stupid. We act that way many times, but we can actually figure stuff out when we're really interested in doing it, like building a temple.
Right. I'm just thinking of the Ancient Aliens program, and I was watching it, and they were saying it wasn't possible to have corners that were so accurately at 90 degrees. And, of course, you can actually see the guy who has, like, the little T-square looking at it. And he's like, it's not 90 degrees at all. You can tell he kind of has to move it around to make it look there. So it's the sort of thing where they'll make the claim of, like, oh, it's so accurate. But, I mean, even doesn't even pass the smell test, you know.
Question number three. Why are scientific evidences of battles, kings, and events took place during ancient times in the book of the Bhagavad Gita? Example, radiation stronger than two atom bombs in India were supposedly first battle described in the book took place.
Is he saying that the ancient people had nuclear weapons?
I think he's suggesting that. And I'm looking at it, and he provided a link. And I looked at the link, and it was... to say that this was a nuclear bomb with radiation is, again, stretching it a little bit. It's reading into something that might not necessarily be there.
Surprise!
Yeah.
This is nothing new, but, oh, man.
Every time we discover some new scientific force, when we discovered radiation, when we thought we discovered orgone radiation and stuff like that, they tried to make, religious people try to make this force out to be basically the force through which God works. We discover what it does. We discover if it's an actual force or not. We put a box around it, and then suddenly it's not anymore. And that's exactly God of the Gaps mythology right there.
And when you toss all this claim about this lost technology, it sounds like the beginning of these Final Fantasy games where the ancients, whether it's Atlantis or some ancient destroyed civilization, all rode around on flying carpets and had flying saucers and things like that. And just, you know, nuclear wars of the gods. And it just becomes just ridiculous. And he gets into some serious, what is his name, Edgar Cayce type type stuff. Whoa. I'd say you don't want to prove this stuff to us. We're not the authorities on this, and you're not going to win any mainstream support by convincing us.
That's a point that I think we should highlight for a moment is if you convince the hosts of Ask an Atheist that your weird idea about religion and technology is true, your accomplishment is that you've basically convinced three yutzes. You've not really changed anything at that point.
You've proven us irrelevant, certainly. Yeah.
And I appreciate that, and I love having these conversations. And I was really glad to get something that wasn't about Jesus or Muhammad or something like that. I was really happy to get. I know we were both actually really happy to get this email.
I was thrilled.
Yeah, because this is a fun one, and I really appreciate you posting it to us. And please, if you have a rebuttal for any of our arguments, I would love to hear it. And in fact, I think we should probably post the full text of this email on the website after the people can see the links for themselves and stuff like that. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Matt, if you're serious about this, get this published in scientific and historical journals, because that's the stuff that'll convince us rather than links to apologetic sites.
Yeah, absolutely. Please, by all means, continue the conversation. This was a lot of fun. So we also, we found the war on Christmas. Did you hear about this?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a fun one. Comes to us from USA Today. There's a Saudi ban on Christmas celebrations, apparently. A Lebanese language newspaper writes that Saudi police raided a home in northwestern Saudi Arabia and detained 41 people for plotting to celebrate Christmas. Let's highlight that. The Lebanese paper published in Beirut said that the raid in Al-Juf is the latest in a string of crackdowns on residents perceived to threaten Saudi Arabia's strict religious code. Saudi Arabia, which is only officially recognizes the Islamic faith, has banned public celebrations of Christmas in the past and has been ambiguous regarding private celebrations of the holiday. So this is blasphemy all over again, for one thing.
So Bill O'Reilly, you should take notes. If you're going to make claims that people are out to get you in your religion, see if they're doing something like this. If Christopher Hitchens and Dawkins and all these people for these years were doing this to you, then you'd have a real point about an attack on your religious freedom.
Yeah.
We're not doing that. Notice that it's not atheists who are calling for secularism, which is neutrality. It's other religions that tend to do this to people rather than people who have no religion. Though that's not entirely exclusive, but it seems to be predominantly them.
I think there's stuff below this threshold that could be called persecution. I don't know that this is the line, do you think?
Sure, it is. I mean, if it's an outright religious practice and they're basically saying, no, we're not only going to allow you to do it in public, but we're also going to arrest you to prevent you from doing it. I mean, that's explicit religious persecution, yeah. I think. Even though it's a secularized holiday, I don't think you can just... It could be secular in a country that is one explicit
religion. That's a good point. In a country where you know, there is a state religion, it's very hard for holidays to become secular.
It could easily be, I mean, it's a secular holiday in Japan, and even though their state religion is Shintoism.
Well, it seems like there's two paths towards, towards skepticism and stuff like that, or secularism in government, rather. One is the path we took, which is we explicitly declare that there is no state religion. And the other path seems to be the path that a lot of European nations took, which is the state religion sort of dehydrates and becomes a vestigial organ and stuff like that. I mean, is that what we're seeing?
Not in the Middle East, of course.
Right.
And I would imagine that that's probably that celebration of Christmas in Europe, which is where the Christmas as a religious force probably started, obviously, in the European continent. I think it's completely secularized. I think they're most nations in Europe, with the exception of Turkey, are secular states, and maybe not the Vatican. I think that's a trend we're going to see across the entire world, and Saudi Arabia is showing their death throes.
Yeah,
I think that's a good point, is that often people get more aggressive as they feel really threatened, as they lose relevance. And I think that a war on Christmas is precisely that.
Mm-hmm.
This attitude of, I'm not allowed, not just equal status, but privileged status, where I'm treated as the default, and that having to share this stage with anyone else is a persecution of me. That's a mentality of somebody who's losing power, not gaining it.
Incidentally, I also find it very strange that when we talk about blasphemy in the laws and stuff like that, when I did the talk down in Olympia, and when I talk to people about it, sometimes even atheists, I go, well, there are nations with a lot of blasphemy laws, and down somewhere in the middle of the list, I say, well, Saudi Arabia. And the answer I tend to get here is, oh, Saudi Arabia? Well, you would expect that, with sort of the undertone being, well, it's kind of okay, because that's where Muhammad was from. And that's... Has anybody else seen that or felt that?
It's very patronizing, and I've heard it from a lot of liberals. It's surprising to hear it, but
just,
oh, well, that's just those people. And it's like, well, hold on a minute here. What do you mean, those people? they're human beings, too. It's not like they're children. Mm-hmm. I don't care what somebody's cultural upbringing is.
Yeah.
There are certain things as a decent human being you shouldn't do, and one of them is raid somebody's house because they celebrate a holiday you don't like.
Right.
Is somebody allowed to be different in a country? Is someone allowed to leave a country? And if you don't meet both of those, then I'm not going to respect your beliefs.
I know you haven't been talking about international blasphemy the same way we have lately.
No.
Well, international blasphemy. That's my new band. But have you encountered where people, there's just sort of an expectation that Saudi Arabia is supposed to be a theocracy?
Yeah, I mean, when Fahrenheit 451 came out, I was living in LA, and there was the movie.
Okay. You mean Fahrenheit 9/11?
Excuse me, Fahrenheit 9/11. So easy to confuse those numbers.
Yeah.
He was sort of, this was in the aftermath, and he was talking to a very liberal crowd, and he was saying, and this guy, the guy was from Qatar or something, but he was an independent journalist, and he said, you really have to be careful, because Michael Moore, as a way to sort of make an us versus them, he would show all these pictures of Saudi officials with hook noses sort of glad-handing George W. Bush. And the idea is that there's some kind of very implicit racism, because they look weird and they're different than us, that the otherness, so we can just describe all sorts of evil stuff to them because they're the other.
Now, who did that?
Wouldn't be able to pull his name out. But that was his critique of saying, you know, Michael Moore was trying to frame, you know, the Saudis are the real problems, not Afghanistan. The Saudis are obviously evil, because think about how repressive they are. Well, yes, it's true they're repressive, but they're probably not evil. You know, they're probably not Dr. Evil.
Right, right. So I have more bad news. And this one, where am I going to get my rocket parts now for my model rockets? Hobby Lobby, a secular craft store run by Christians, has declared that they're refusing to provide their employees contraception coverage as part of their health benefits as part of the Obamacare bill. Their non-compliance will cost them $1.3 million a day, and they'd rather eat that cost than provide birth control to their workers, citing religious reasons. All they're asking for is a narrow exemption from the law that says they don't have to provide drugs they believe cause abortions, Hobby Lobby's attorney Kyle Duncan, who works for the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty, says. Our basic point is the government can't put a corporation in the position of choosing between its faith and following the law. Birth control pills and emergency contraception, commonly known as Plan B, do not induce abortion.
Yeah, notice the hedging of the words from the lawyer there?
Oh, yeah.
Drugs they believe cause abortions. They don't. I mean, no doctor is going to tell you that. No judge is going to tell you that. It doesn't matter what you believe. It only matters what is. Is it true?
Yeah.
So it's like if I refuse to pay taxes, for instance, because I believe President Obama is one of David Icke's lizard men, right. it doesn't matter what I believe. It only matters if he really is. And by the way, he's not.
Right.
I shouldn't get a pass for being wrong just because I'm wrong because of my religious beliefs.
Yeah.
And that seems to be what they're doing. It's like, well, I deserve to have a pass from my anti-discrimination laws because I'm religious. I deserve to have a – I mean, what if I have a harsh belief towards people who are disabled and refuse to acknowledge the Americans with Disabilities Act? Should I be allowed to do that? Yeah. Or can I put up a whites-only sign because I have a – I'm part of a weird fringe sect of Mormonism that doesn't acknowledge the change made in 1978 against racists? I mean – what am I not allowed to do? Do I have to obey any laws as long as it's attached to my religion in some way?
And this is we got to be honest, this is a slippery slope argument. But sometimes slippery slope arguments are entirely appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to taking any and all opportunities to sort of find a way to exempt yourself from following federal law, people have reasonable opposition, I think, to certain federal laws that are there. The one thing I can think is this store is either going to go the way of the Chick-fil-A or not. Either there's going to be national condemnation, and they'll be the Fox News crowd will be lining up at their door to support them,
yeah.
Or the opposite, or they'll lose business.
Well, they're already losing $1.3 million a day. Is what they're saying.
I don't think they make that much in a day.
Yeah, that seems a little high.
Yeah, so one way or the other, this problem might get solved. And it is. It's just another. It's a situation where somebody wants their religion to trump the law.
Mm-hmm.
I realize they want to make money. It's their store. They can do what they want with it. But we have labor laws in this country for a very specific reason.
And let's just say also that your health care coverage is part of your compensation package, the same way your paycheck is.
Yeah.
And your boss has no right to be able to determine how I spend my paycheck. It doesn't matter if I have a really Christian boss, he can't stop me from spending part of my paycheck on a Christopher Hitchens book, for instance.
Yeah.
It's none of his business. And the same thing goes for the healthcare.
And that's basically what this is, isn't it?
Yeah.
What it comes down to. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. For the record, there's a hobby store locally independent in Tacoma that I go to. In a moment of science.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences, and more. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's number one source of atheist videos.
I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it'll explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
The perfect Mormon wife in the perfect Mormon town has a secret. She doesn't believe in God. Her husband has a secret too. He's in love with another man. She's stood by her husband for 2 years, but when she meets a man who calls himself X, an artist traveling through the western states, her resolve to be the perfect wife finally crumbles. Baptism for the Dead, a novel by Libby Hawker, explores one woman's loss of faith in modern-day America. Get your copy today from your favorite ebook retailer. Paperback edition coming soon.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. good. Call us. Leave us a message. Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future. That's 206-420-0997. And wait for the tone.
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And now, a moment of science.
Hello. This week, I want to talk to you about the mechanisms of evolution. I'm sure most of you are familiar with Charles Darwin's ideas of natural selection and survival of the fittest, but there's more to evolution than just that. Much more. For starters, let's define evolution. Evolution means descent with modification, basically the idea that a population's genetic makeup will change over time. But how much time? Well, that depends on the species and the pressures that they face. Some species, like the sturgeon, have remained relatively unchanged for tens of millions of years, while other species, like Atlantic tomcod, may make significant changes in as little as 60 years, and certain strains of bacteria can evolve new abilities in just a matter of hours. So what are some of the factors that influence evolution? In natural selection, some members of a population have beneficial mutations, called adaptations, which give them a better chance of surviving to reproduce in their environments than their peers, and which they pass on to their young through their DNA. Over time, these chosen ones produce more offspring and in turn alter the average genetic makeup of their species, making them a distinct species from their ancestors. For example, at some point in the past, a tiger's ancestors developed patterns that helped them hide in tall grass. The best hiders caught more prey, lived longer, and produced more offspring with similar mutations. Of those offspring, those with the best camouflage caught more prey, lived longer, and reproduced more. Each generation gradually became better and better camouflaged, leading to the dramatic but effective camo we see on tigers today. Now, sexual selection is a type of natural selection that applies to species that reproduce sexually. A great demonstration of sexual selection is the flamboyant coloration of the male peacock. His bright blue and green feathers and huge tail make him very attractive to the ladies, but they also make him easier for tigers to catch. Fortunately for him, though, his extreme sexual attractiveness means that he's still more likely to pass on his genes before getting caught. Sometimes sexual selection seems counterproductive, but in the end, what's really important is making the most babies, no matter how wacky you look or how horribly you die. Artificial selection is caused by humans, but the same rules apply. Over the past 15,000 years, we used artificial selection to turn gray wolves into numerous species of domestic dogs, but we also use it when we select and pollinate our crops. For example, did you know that Brussels sprouts, cabbage, kale, broccoli, cauliflower, and kohlrabi all share a common ancestor? Yeah, we got all those different crops by artificial selection upon the wild mustard plant. Neat, huh? Genetic drift is another force of evolution, and is a change in a small population's genetic makeup from one generation to the next, caused by chance events. For example, if a field containing equal numbers of tall and short dandelion plants is suddenly mowed for the first time in decades, only the short ones will survive to reproduce, thus changing the available gene pool within a single generation. Similarly, the bottleneck effect occurs when there's a sudden drop in the numbers of a population. This may be caused by a disease, a natural disaster, or another event, but the net result is a smaller gene pool. Interestingly, genetic studies suggest that just 70,000 years ago, such an event may have occurred with humans, bringing our numbers to a mere 10,000 worldwide. Gene flow occurs when two or more separate populations of the same species begin to overlap or merge. This expands the gene pool for both populations and leads to greater genetic variation. Divergent evolution happens when members of the same species begin to exploit different environments or resources. Over time, these differences result in adaptations that distinguish one from the other and can eventually lead to separate species entirely, like Darwin's famous finches. Here in the Pacific Northwest, our populations of orca whales have been diverging for over 10,000 years, resulting in distinct, resident, and transient populations that are well on their way to becoming different species entirely. Convergent evolution is almost the opposite effect. In convergent evolution, unrelated species develop similar physical traits as adaptations to similar environments, lifestyles, and challenges. A great example of this is the body plans of flying squirrels in North America and marsupial sugar gliders in Australia. While they share no recent common ancestor, they have both evolved gliding flaps, small size, and ruddering tails, as well as nocturnal schedules as adaptations to their similar environments and lifestyles. More extreme examples of convergent evolution are the ability of both bats and dolphins to echolocate, the fish-grasping jaws of crocodiles and garfish, and the venomous stings of numerous organisms from different phyla, including stingrays, hornets, jellyfish, cone-shell snails, vipers, platypuses, and even stinging nettle plants. Now, this was just a brief primer, and there's a lot more to say about the forces of evolution, but given that evolution's been happening on Earth for about 3.6 billion years, the rest can wait for another episode. I'm Dan Lombardo, and I hope you enjoyed this moment of science.
Thank you very much, Dan. We actually have an email having to do with evolution, so if you would stick with us, I would really appreciate that. That'd be really good. However, we've got a very interesting phone call, which I would like to take. We have on the line Cheryl from Tacoma, and she's a Christian whose atheist Facebook friends think all Christians are irrational. Is this just atheists or just her friends? How are you doing, Cheryl?
Hello.
Hi. So you're having some trouble with Facebook friends.
Yes. Well, I'm a Christian. I have a number of atheist Facebook friends, and many of them, it seems like in discussions, seem to feel that all Christians are stupid or irrational. And I was wondering what you would say about that, because these are people that would normally be offended, very offended, by, the characterization of any other social or demographic group in that manner.
Yeah. I'll start out by saying, are these recently public atheists, or are these folks who have been atheists for a long time?
I think it's been mostly people that have been atheists for a long time.
Okay. Because one thing that we do come across in the atheism visibility movement is there's sort of anytime anybody I guess goes from one mode of thought to another, but this is especially true among atheists, is that we sometimes go through an angry phase where people are basically kicking themselves for all the things they didn't like, and as a result, sort of kick people who are near them accidentally.
Yeah, I'm also kind of curious too about the actual post. I think sometimes there's a sensitivity to criticism of religious belief, and there's two different kinds of arguments an atheist can make. One is that all Christians are like this, or that saying that Christian belief is irrational. And those are two different arguments. One of them is incorrect, because you shouldn't say that any one group of people is bad. But it's not the same thing as saying somebody's belief system is bad or irrational.
Well, I guess that's the question. Are they actually calling their friends out, or are they just saying generally Christians are irrational?
Well, okay, for example, today one of them posted a status update that said, I am not a Christian because I don't believe in slavery, genocide, rape, incest, all this stuff, you know. And somebody else responded, I'm not a Christian because I stopped being a Christian when my IQ rose above room temperature. And those type of comments, and I totally get that it's possible to not accept somebody's belief system and still not think that they're generally an irrational, stupid person.
Yeah, that's something we do say on the show. From our reading of the Bible, it does contain a lot of those things that person is not a Christian for. But that doesn't necessarily mean that everybody who's a Christian supports rape and genocide and murder and all that. I'm certain you don't.
Right.
But that's some people are willing to look the other way about that, and that's why we say people are better than the religion. But some people aren't willing to necessarily take the good with the bad.
Though I'm not going to deny that stuff is in the Bible pretty explicitly, and that's something that just because most Christians aren't like that, and I know clearly that you aren't, it's still there, and for most of Christianity's history,
but
that stuff was believed.
Let's get back to the root of it, is the other comment here. Cheryl, it's the one about the IQs and room temperature that you're most concerned with, right?
Well, yeah, it's not that I'm offended, because I've come to expect it,
right.
But I just think, it's very sad to see somebody, it seems like they're as trapped in their stereotypes as other people, as they accuse other people of being.
That's something that I've been saying about the atheism movement, and this is where I'm going to come down and be a little bit honest, is we're a group of people just like any other group of people. We're any self-selecting group of people is going to be made up of people from all walks of life, all thoughts, all sort of, personalities, and you've got some people who are atheists who also happen to be jerks. I mean, some of the time, I'm one of them. and I think religion, atheist, Christian, Islamic, anything, if somebody's being jerky to their friends, you call them out on it. And if it's, yeah, and I think you just go, if it's your friends, and you say, we kind of have to be nice to each other here. Can we not throw insults? Can we keep our discussion of religion down to the facts of the matter? I think that would be a good way to go. But on the other hand, this is Facebook. It's not a medium for communication. It's really good at communicating insults, but it so far it hasn't been that good at communicating much else.
Right. Yeah, true.
I mean, is that sort of where you're sitting there as well? I guess.
Well, yes, that is my viewpoint. I always say, you wouldn't talk that way about any other group, about gays or blacks or, you know, anybody else, you know. So why is it okay to talk this way about Christians? And it seems to me like I think that there's a big hurt there. I think that a lot of them have been hurt indirectly or directly.
I think you've put your finger on it. I think you've got something there. Yeah, and that is how they respond. It may be polite, it may be impolite, but I think there is a response to pain there, and I think you're noticing that. And that's very good of you to recognize. I don't want to sound, you know, patronizing or anything like that, but that's not something when I get in debates online, when I used to get in debates online, that people would notice from other atheists, is that sometimes that need to insult, that need to kick, that angry phase is in fact a response to pain. So thank you for recognizing that.
Well, thank you for talking. It was I'm actually surprised I got through. I just recently started listening to KLAY, and I plan to become a regular listener, so I'll be looking forward to your shows on Sundays.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for your call, Cheryl.
Thank you.
That was good. And yeah, I mean, we do have to recognize that we're not Christians for a reason. You know, it's not, we didn't like, ooh, atheism is cool, let's go to atheism. There's a lot of stuff in the Bible I don't like, and there's a lot of reasons to not like the Bible, but that doesn't mean we need to be mean to every Christian we see.
Well, yeah, I think not all of them. Yes, I think it's sort of important to note that there is a difference between attacking somebody's belief and attacking their
person. Yeah.
And sometimes we have to sort of take a step back from something that's jarring and see if somebody's doing what we think they're doing. And that goes from us, too, that we have to make sure that somebody's not attacking. Attacking our beliefs is fine.
Yeah.
Attacking us as an entire group is bad. So that's why I'm not necessarily have a problem with the first comment she mentioned, but I do have a problem with the second.
But if Agreed. You notice that she was in the same boat, she's like, "Yeah, that's what he believes. That's okay." But this room temperature thing, that's crap. And I think we're all in agreement there.
Yeah, that's just being a jerk.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got a really cool email about evolution. And since we've got our moment of science guy here, let's dive into it. This is Ivan from Georgia, and they write, "I have a couple of questions concerning evolution. One, why does male and female sexual reproduction exist? Is it to create more variety among the species?"
Well, sexual reproduction takes advantage of something called independent assortment. Mm. And it's actually something that exists in bacteria. It exists in all sorts of species, in plants and animals and fungi and protists. But the real advantage is that basically you can get more variation and more mutations in the genome faster. So whereas asexual reproduction is great if conditions are stable. Sexual reproduction is great when conditions are unstable, because you're going to get more changes and more adaptations that might allow your species to survive through, you know, say a meteor strike or something like that.
So basically more genes are in the pot to potentially give you traits that may add or detract from your survival.
So the copying between two organisms creates a larger vector for errors, which creates mutations, which drives evolution.
It's not exactly a larger vector for errors. Basically, in sexual reproduction, both genomes from each organism are sort of lined up, and the analogous sections are exchanged.
Okay.
So the offspring that would have been, you know, more or less a clone of the parent if it were an asexual reproduction has traits from both parents in a sexual reproduction.
Yeah, it's the interesting thing that came out of this for me is I made an allusion to MP3s, that DNA is basically the MP3 of biology, in that it creates an MP3 compression of an audio file is pretty good, but it is a lossy compression algorithm. It actually throws out a lot of data that isn't necessary to it.
But it's also faster and more efficient to transfer, isn't it?
Exactly. Right. I like that. So the second question is, plants and animals, could one have ever existed before the other and before the other evolved into existence? Considering that plants rely on carbon dioxide to survive, which is produced by animals, and animals rely on plant-produced oxygen to survive.
Well, carbon dioxide isn't just produced by animals. Carbon dioxide is also produced by geological processes, by volcanic activities. There's a number of things that can cause that, chemical reactions and whatnot. And the same for oxygen. I mean, O2 is the most stable form of oxygen. So these are, CO2 is a compound, but O2 is an element. I mean, it's going to be present. However, taking CO2 and turning it into O2 is pretty much something that is going to happen mostly through animals and plants to some extent that do it as well. But the reverse is also true with taking O2 and turning it into CO2. However, according to what we know about the fossil record as far as microbes go, plants and animals sort of came about somewhere around the same time. I mean, we had photosynthetic bacteria that they're not really plants, but they photosynthesize.
Mm-hmm.
We had other chemoautotrophic bacteria. However, what you'll find is there are cells like animal cells that have a mitochondria and no chloroplast, whereas plant cells always have a mitochondria and a chloroplast.
And oxygen is a relatively recent component of the atmosphere.
It is. We used to have a lot more CO2 in the atmosphere, and over billions of years, photosynthetic primary producers basically turned us from a CO2 atmosphere into an oxygen atmosphere.
Yeah, and it actually, if I'm recalling my history of biology correctly, it actually poisoned a lot of the creatures that were around then.
There were tremendous extinctions.
Huge extinctions, and then somebody, something evolved that said, hey, this is actually a very efficient fuel, and then the idea got copied. So,
yeah.
Very cool. Thank you very much.
No problem.
We've got another, one more email. This is a, actually, we have to be very quick. This is Sam from the internet, not me. Hey, I'm a Christian, so obviously not me, and I was wondering if you can honestly answer if God exists. I'm not looking for a fight, like most people think that Christians do with atheists, but I just want to see what kind of atheists you are.
We're the kind that doesn't believe in God.
Yeah.
I would say to your answer, can you honestly say? I'd say yes. I would honestly answer probably not.
Yeah.
And I'd say probably on such a large scale that it's a ridiculous enough question that I'd say, yeah, there's no such thing as God.
My simple answer would be no. No, I don't think that I can honestly answer that God does or does not exist. The evidence for both sides of that argument is equal in proportion. There is zero empirical evidence for the existence of God and zero empirical evidence against the existence of God. But given the claims that have been made and how they fail to stand up to scientific scrutiny, I would have to say probably not. But yeah. I can't say honestly a 100% absolute no, because that's bad science.
We had Casey on earlier, and he put this in a way that I really like, is that one, whether we think God exists, we say the evidence is against it, that's a statement of knowledge, and I believe that there isn't a God, and that's a statement of belief, and that there are differences between statements of belief and statements of knowledge. And on Ask an Atheist, most of us fall into that idea, that there's no evidence for or against God, but we believe there is no God.
Yeah, I think that this question of 100%, I think, is kind of useless, because I don't think any of us need 100% on most things. I think 95 is good enough for me.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody wants to make that number smaller, they're more than welcome to provide me with some evidence.
Yeah, and I said that there's no evidence for or against God, but I think sometimes there's, it seems like a case could be made sometimes. And sometimes I want to try it, and then sometimes I realize how ridiculous that is, so I tend to avoid it. And that's all the time we've got for today. My name is Sam Mulvey. With me was Mike Gillis and Rebecca Friedman, Dan Lombardo and Casey Doran. Our production assistant is Bridget Lombardo. As usual, music is by Chris Coleman. Post show is at Peterson Brothers 1111 at 1111 South 11th Street in Tacoma in an hour. Ask an Atheist is an NED Media production. Go to our website at askanatheist.tv. See you guys next week.